It's Marketplace Tech for Tuesday the 29th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Netflix turns 20 today, and if you think that sounds crazy, you aren't like those of us who remember looking at PG-13 rated sleeves of movies your mom would never rent for you in Blockbuster brick and mortar shops. True story, you can still get DVDs from Netflix in the mail, but the company's 100 million subscribers around the world are mostly streaming subscribers these days. On its anniversary, we called up Gina Keating, author of Netflixed, The Epic Battle for America's Eyeballs. Gina, thanks for talking.
Thanks for having me.
So Netflix is 20? I can't believe it.
It is very difficult to imagine that they've come so far from where they started, which was mailing DVDs to people.
It's crazy to think that there are some people around now that don't even remember that Netflix was a company that only mailed DVDs for a long time. How did the company transition to what it is today?
Initially, they were actually selling a lot more DVDs than they were renting. And I'd say one of the most important pivot points was when they chose to sacrifice the revenue they were getting from DVD sales to go into rental, because they correctly assumed that other companies would come along and be able to get wholesale prices for DVDs and undercut them. So they completely got rid of about 90% of their revenue, just focused on how to do rental by mail and then eventually move into streaming.
What else has Netflix done that has been innovative?
The next thing that they did that was really important was when they developed this movie matching algorithm. And then, of course, going into content creation with Lilyhammer, but really they started to do a better job of it in 2013 with House of Cards.
So Disney has a new streaming service. Do you think that's going to bury Netflix?
Disney has wonderful content. It is very valuable. What Disney and the other studios are not are internet companies. They're not software companies, and that is what Netflix is. Netflix has 20 years worth of data now on all of its customers. It has the ability to predict trends. Disney can't do that.
What's next for Netflix? I mean, where do you think they'll be in 10 years?
Who knows, really, what's going to play out? I mean, I couldn't have predicted any of the stuff that they were doing 10 years ago when they first started streaming. It just seemed like no way was this going to work because the catalog was so little. But the data that they have is so rich that they're making comparisons and predictions that I don't think we can even imagine right now.
You just need a little more data on Netflix so you can make your own predictions about what they're going to do next.
Yeah, well, they're never going to give you that information.
Gina Keating, she's the author of Netflix, The Epic Battle for America's Eyeballs. Gina, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is hard to overstate the widespread impact coming into focus in Texas in the wake of heavy rains and flooding from Hurricane Harvey. Technology is playing a role, from people being rescued via Twitter to people donating to the Red Cross via text. Internet connectivity, by the way, is really important in disasters these days, whether we're talking about IP phone service to help you reach first responders or organizing relief efforts directly after the event. Greta Byram looks at the intersection of technology, underserved communities, and environmental disasters as director of the Resilient Communities Program at New America, and someone who builds mesh networks designed to withstand big events like hurricanes and tropical storms. Greta, thanks for talking with us. What happens to our communication networks during disasters?
Anybody who's experienced a major crisis or disaster in the last 5 or 10 years probably noticed that your cell phone stops working. There's something called a cascading network failure that happens to the telecommunication systems generally when you'll have one failure, a tower will lose power, and it basically places so much stress on the system that it overloads other parts, and then they start to fail, and eventually the whole network goes down for a neighborhood or a few neighborhoods.
Yeah, but why do you think Wi-Fi is part of the solution?
One of the things that's become really clear is that it's usually the people who live in a place already that provide the most critical first response after a disaster.
Yeah, but why do they need the internet?
So if they don't have a basic way to communicate with each other, it's going to be much harder for them to organize response. And so, you know, Wi-Fi is a very basic technology. It's something that, you know, you can always access using devices that you already have. And what it does is it enables those true first responder, those community people who know where people live that need help, and enables them to continue to talk to each other even when the other systems fail. So we've designed these mesh networks so that even if the internet goes down, the networks will still work on the neighborhood level.
So let's talk about a neighborhood that you worked in. After Superstorm Sandy in New York, you worked in Red Hook.
What we saw in Red Hook was the residents had this like one scrappy little mesh network.
Uh-huh.
And using that very rudimentary mesh system, they were able to keep parts of the neighborhood connected to other parts of the neighborhood. They were able to organize volunteers. They were able to delegate people to send supplies. And, you know, this was a situation where there were some residents in the public housing there, the Red Hook houses, who were trapped on upper floors. And so the Red Hook Initiative was able to organize volunteers and supplies with this, you know, very scrappy kind of inexpensive mesh network. Mm. And so what we're working on is using this technology to build the social infrastructure that will help support these communities in an emergency or disaster.
Greta Byram is director of the Resilient Communities Program at New America. Greta, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.